Okay, this hour, open lines. Right toward the end, we had a caller who wanted to hear the interview that I had conducted a long time ago with the late Steve Irwin. It's a short little piece. We'll run that at the end of the show. Open lines next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Open lines for the rest of tonight. West of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Arizona.
Well, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Linda, and I watch a lot of those shows of like Taps and the Most Haunted and everything. And there's a big difference between the two. Like on the Most Haunted team, they always show their selves. You know, have you noticed that?
Yes.
Where a lot of the action isn't really being filmed. And between them and Taps, I think Taps is more realistic, and they're into, like, disproving.
Mm-hmm. Skeptics? Yeah. Debunkers?
Debunkers, yes, exactly.
What do you think of debunkers?
I think that's a really good thing that they try to debunk what's going on, because it separates the hogwash, you know what I mean, all the junk from
you think it's healthy.
It's very healthy. It kind of proves that they're making a point, you know.
Yeah, but don't you think they say, "I don't believe" to everything?
I think there's a couple of them that are that do believe, but they like to get the proof. You know, they're looking for proof, which is, my opinion, that's what the investigations should be about.
Sure.
Actually, you know,
but they should go into it with an open, you know, in a willing eye of, you know, possibly believing, rather than going in there looking for ways to show that it's not real.
Yeah, I believe so too. I agree with you there. But with the most haunted group, they're like really spooked all the time. Like they're really over dramatic about, you know, their
It's their television.
Yeah, I suppose. Do you know if you're going to have Jason and Grant on the show?
I had Jason and Grant on about 2 years ago, and I think they want to come back on.
Oh, that'd be
so
great.
We probably will. They're good guys. They were really former plumbers that they loved investigating ghosts, and they went in and did that. So yeah, we'll be getting them back. I don't have a date yet. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My name's Steve. I'm calling from Oakville, Ontario, Canada.
Hey, Steve, go ahead.
I've listened to your show many times, and I listened to all the stories about ghosts and whatnot, and I was a little skeptical until in December, or I went to my girlfriend's place in Montreal.
And it happened to you.
It did.
Tell me.
Well, her father, he was trained by his mother, and his father's in, her father's in her.
All right, let's go back now.
70s.
Her father was
yes, my
trained,
girlfriend's father, sorry,
was trained
by his mother.
By his mother to do what?
To invoke spirits, and she was trained by nuns in Montreal.
Okay.
And so what happened was, it was a Saturday night, and they had told me before that they have done this. So they got a coffee table, it was very low, and with a glass top on it, and put it inside the kitchen. In the kitchen, the floor is all with tiles. And the father, he started asking questions. Now, we were all around the table. There was five of us, and we were all linked with our hands just very gently on the table. And we would touch our baby fingers and our thumbs. So we all had contact on the table. And so the father started asking questions of one of his dead sons. His name was Denis. And he was asking for Denis to come and be with us. And they just started asking questions.
Kind of invite him in, huh?
And invite him in. And the table, George, started moving. Now, I'm not talking just a little bit. I'm talking the table moved 20 feet.
20 feet?
And then it would go in circles.
Did it levitate at all, too?
No, it didn't.
Just stayed on the ground.
No, it moved all around, and I actually have it on tape.
You must have been freaking out.
Well, we did it twice. We did it for about 20 minutes the first time, and then the second time we did it for another 15 minutes. And actually, even my girlfriend's mother was so freaked out that she actually had to move away from the actual table because they had never actually had it happen this much.
Right.
For some reason, like you'd ask a question, like there was one question where I wasn't even on the table. I was over by the sink. And I said to Denny, my girlfriend's name is Christiane. I said, is Christiane and I, are we good for each other? Well, a table came right over to me 10 feet and it hit me.
And I said, bumped you?
Yeah, it came right up to me. And I said, Denis, you've blocked me and I can't move. And then it moved 2 feet back away.
And gave you space.
Gave me space. But the whole table kept moving around. And I'd love to send you a tape of it because
I would love to see that.
And but I'm on your website and I can't see the address. So I'd love to send it to you.
Send it to Lex at Lex, L-E-X.
I can't send it email. I have to mail it to you.
Oh, you have to physically mail it to us.
It's too big.
I'll put you on hold and Tom will give you our mailing address, okay?
Yeah, so it's the first time it's ever happened, and I'll tell you, it was unbelievable.
All right, we'll do that.
Thank you.
Promise to get it to me?
I absolutely, yeah.
Okay, you're on hold. Tommy, take that line, give him our address, our mailing address. So many people call in sometimes, and they've got this incredible video or pictures of things, and they never send it in. So you have to follow through. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Robin from Pittsburgh.
Hello, Robin.
And I just wanted to tell you two quick stories. When I was about 25, I had a black cat, and I would go out jogging up and down the blocks. And this cat would always come with me, and the neighbors were astonished to see me running around jogging and my black cat running along with me.
Did you have him on a leash?
No. It would just jog naturally with me and come back in the house.
That's
when
amazing.
We were done.
Wherever you went, Robin, that's where the cat went, huh?
Yep. It just loved to go jogging with me. And when I was 12, I had a cat that didn't come home for 2 weeks. And I was worried about it, and I couldn't think of it being outside dead somewhere with the rain and everything. So I said a prayer to help me find the cat, and I put on my little yellow raincoat, and I went out across the baseball field, walked through some weeds and paths and, you know, treachery.
Treachery.
Yeah.
I guess to a little girl, it's treachery.
Yeah.
You probably look like the Morton Salt girl.
And I walked right to where my cat was. It was like I was in a trance, and I just walked right to it.
Was he okay?
And when I stopped, I opened my eyes, and there was my cat dead.
Oh.
So I took my little yellow rain jacket and put it on the raincoat and took him home and buried him. But, I mean, cats, I really like cats. I mean, I like dogs, too, but very interesting stories.
That's pretty
cat
gutsy.
Would dog with you.
Pretty gutsy to pick up an animal that had died.
Oh, yeah. It's
for a little
like
girl. Most people would have been scared.
I didn't want to be left out in the rain.
Let me ask you a strange question.
Uh-huh.
How old were you? You were 8 years old then?
12.
12 years old. After you did that, did you ever go to a funeral?
I've been to funerals,
Do they scare you?
No.
They don't bother you at all, do they?
No. I have premonitions to this day.
About what?
I went to my bedroom where my fiancé and I slept, and I had gotten out of the bath and put my robe on, and here I reached my hand out because somebody was helping me on with the other sleeve, and there was nobody there. I swear it was a ghost because Tim was coming down the hallway, and I said, were you just here? And he said, no. And who the heck was helping me on with my other robe sleeve out of the bath?
Who do you think?
I know the place is haunted here, but I don't think they're evil spirits. I think they're good spirits.
Well, and you're probably right about that. Thanks for the call. Next up, we'll go to the international line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
George, it's Francis calling back with an update about my cat, Tommy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing really good again.
Amazing.
Yeah, I found, and I wanted to thank everybody for praying for him because I didn't realize that there was a little vet clinic here in the area, and I found out about that and brought him in, and he has hypothyroid.
And he's being treated properly now.
Yeah, he's on medication now, and he's doing much better. It was just a little freaky for me because...
Oh, you were broken up, if I remember.
Yeah, well, because he's such an active cat, and he just kind of went downhill in a week and a half really fast, like lost a lot of weight and everything. And
what's happening to my Tommy here, too? He's kind of going downhill quickly.
Tommy the producer?
Yes, quickly, too.
Well, maybe you should bring him to the vet. But I also had a... the gentleman that was calling earlier when Amelia was on was saying something about how his cat would lay on him.
Yeah, and purr.
His chest and stuff. My grandmother, well, our family's had a really awesome history with cats and relationship with cats. And my grandmother was a medicine woman. She was also a midwife. And she had taught my mom that when we were little kids and we'd get sick, and of course, you know how little kids, well, I was the youngest, so I was always trying to dress the cat in different clothes and stuff. So the cat would always stay away from me. But whenever I got sick, which wasn't very often, he would come and lay on my chest. And I would, and of course, when you're sick and you have a fever and stuff, the last thing you want is some furry, hot little monster laying on you. So, but she would tell me that to let him lay on me because they soak up the sickness from you.
Well, yeah, was that an old myth, or did it really work?
Oh, it did. It really did work. And actually,
it's like chicken noodle soup.
And I don't know why, but it just does. And even to this day, our little monsters in our family, if they get sick, the cats are always naturally attracted to them and will go and lay with them and lay on their chest.
That's pretty good. I never knew that.
Yeah. Well, and actually, it was neat because there's pictures of my grandmother because they used to travel around with horse and wagon and stuff and to different spots to do different...
So the cat kind of like draws out the sickness and nothing happens to the cat, right?
No.
It doesn't inherit the illness or anything.
No, that used to be my question to my mom, but the cat was always fine.
That's great. That's a neat story. Hey, thanks for sharing that with us. Let's go next to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
How are you doing? My name is Malik from Philadelphia.
Hello, Malik.
How you doing? Good. I was calling in reference to when's the next time you're going to have a show about the Masonic Order and as far as the government and all the United States?
Probably on Friday the 25th, so not too long from now.
Oh, okay. I got another question about the cats. I just came home from the hospital. I had kidney failure.
Oh,
and my wife has a cat. Me and the cat never been close. Like, I just feed it and that's it.
Sure.
But ever since I've been home from the hospital, the cat like jumps on my lap and does the same thing that the man was saying as far as the cat purring. And I feel so much better since I thought it was something strange, but it's something about the cat and the healing process.
You've grown attached to the cat now, haven't you?
Oh, I love this cat.
How's your kidneys, by the way?
Well, it's working at 10% now, but the doctor said that I might not have to go on dialysis now.
Both of them or just one of them?
Both of them.
So both kidneys, you're only at 10%?
Yes.
Well, I guess that's better than zero, isn't it?
Yeah, it's better. That's better than dialysis.
And what are they doing to treat you?
Well, they just give me some medicine, and I'm on a low-protein diet. and low water because you retain a lot of fluids.
Can you
can you
get that back up to 60, 70, 80%?
No, they said once it goes, it's gone.
Really?
Yeah, once it goes, it's gone.
How old are you?
I'm 35.
Ah, man, you're young, so you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right. Let's move on to our Beast of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Good morning.
I'm Ron calling from Central Minnesota.
Yeah.
Say, I got a question for you. Myself, my mom, and my brother have all had experiences where we're sleeping and we wake up and we're paralyzed. And this lasts anywhere from 5 seconds up to a minute.
Sure.
Have you ever heard anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. You either have a very natural syndrome called sleep paralysis that happens to a lot of people. Now, you're not seeing anything weird, though, are you? Like a little old lady hanging around or anything like that?
Well, I didn't see no little old ladies, but one time was kind of spooky. I seen an image of the devil, and then just random images like a radio and just goofy things you wouldn't associate with anything.
Yeah, that could be just tied into the paralysis. But you all do this?
Yeah, it's kind of rare. And, you know, one time my mom had it happen, and she was told once that if you can move your toe, you can move the rest of your body. And she tried so hard to move her toe that she pulled the muscles in her toe.
It's genetic.
But that's what I was wondering, but it's just such a weird feeling. I mean, there's nothing worse than waking up and not being able to move.
No, that's sleep paralysis. I'm pretty sure that's what's happening to all of you. Wildcard line, hello there.
Hi, George. It's Bruce in Alberta, Canada.
Hey, Bruce.
Yeah, I just had a story to relate. I was in aviation when I was a young man.
Okay.
And I had a near-death experience. And my life has been like Barney Hill. Remember Betty and Barney Hill?
Oh, yeah.
I've been on medication, and it's like a story from, there's more to this world than we can imagine in heaven and earth.
Are you glad that you had this happen to you?
Well, I found the Lord, and when I turned 50 years old, my life hasn't been the same since.
It's, I trust when you say it hasn't been the same since, it's better for you.
It's better, much better, and I agree with everything Amelia had to say about the puppy dogs and the cats on the planet and all the wildlife.
Yeah, but, she's a pretty wonderful person. So you're leading the right way. You're going down the path the right way.
I changed my life. I used to listen to you on the East Coast in New England and Montreal, Canada.
Sure.
I'm in Alberta now.
We're everywhere.
But I love your show, and I listen whenever I can. And what Amelia said about tuning into AM and tuning out all the big business and all those pernicious machines out there that make money and get with the real world and have a puppy dog or a pussy cat in your life is one that can be said for that.
Or, in my case, a porcupine pufferfish.
Porcupine pufferfish.
All right, thanks. I'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. A porcupine pufferfish. Have you ever seen one, Steve? Yeah. Blue eyes. Those things are gorgeous. Back, I wouldn't date one, but maybe I have. I'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program, James Mullaney joins us. He's going to tell us how he didn't believe in the American prophet Edgar Cayce, but changed his mind. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's go back now to final calls. We'll go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello, how are you, George?
I'm doing great, thank you.
This is Jeff from the Buckeye, the state that's owned by the SEC. We just can't beat them. We just can't beat them. I don't know why, but congrats to LSU. They just came up and showed up and played.
Oh, man, it's just, beat Michigan. You do that, but that's where you choke.
That's it. I can't figure it out, but I tell you what, proud of the boys. They worked hard, and hey, man, you know, it's just nice to, you know, hey, there's not a lot of kids that could say they went there twice.
That's even gone there once. Exactly right.
That's right. So they should be privileged to even be there. Hey, just want to let you know, I heard that lady talking earlier about ghosts and the other gentleman about the seance. I brought up a memory of mine when I was a child. I had my father owned a duplex downtown in St. Louis. And I'm originally from St. Louis. I moved to the Buckeye about 9 years ago.
Ah, okay.
And my father had a duplex down there that my mother, you know, my grandmother owned. And so when he got ready to start rehabbing it to turn it into a, or it was a house, and he turned it into a duplex, he we had an old couch that was sitting in the living room. We'd go in, and he was telling us, oh, okay, this is what we're going to do here. This is what we're going to do here. And we came back to the couch. Well, because it was winter, it was cold, and we threw our coats on the couch when we walked in. Well, when we came back to the couch, our coats were gone. And we walked through the house, and in the back, by the back door, on the pegs, by the back door, they were hung up.
I love it.
I don't know. I we never could figure it out. My brother had heard some things, and you know, when he was growing up and stuff, and I just thought that was kind of funny.
You have a tidy ghost there.
We don't know. We think it might have been because it's an old farmhouse is what it was. It was an old farmhouse back. It was a turn of the century house. So it's been there a long, long time. It's gone now, unfortunately. But the other thing, the other lady made a very good point about, like, most haunted and all that. The other thing, how do these people just come? It seems like they just come in for a day or two, look around and say, okay, well, this is what it is. I don't understand why they don't, like, get involved in some of these things, like actually do something like some of these, like, castles or something that they say are very, very haunted. Why don't they do, like, an actual study, set up cameras, set up sound, motion detectors, all this, and do it for, like, a year and really,
and,
like...
And stay. I mean, well, you know what? Because, one, it's television. They're in, they're out. They're going by the episodes. You know, we really do need a scientific study like that, you know, fully funded, you know, with a lot of money and a lot of equipment. I think that would be fantastic.
Because I think if you're going to prove it, I mean, you can't just do it for a week or 2 weeks or a couple of days. You know, you're going to have to get in there, and because it's, you know, it seems to me like a lot of this stuff is cyclical. It, like, you know, it kind of comes and goes with the strengths, and so that's my. But hey, George, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And I tell you what, I just started recently listening to you. I just started working nights, and I drive a lot through the evenings, and just a pleasure to listen to your show. And you get some pretty thought provoking things on there, makes you really think about some stuff.
We sure do. Thanks, and appreciate you joining the team here. That's what it is. It's a coast to coast family team. Let's go next to our wild card line. You're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, George.
Hi. Where might you be calling
from? Be in Columbus, Ohio.
Ah, okay.
I have a question for you, and then I have a wonderful cat story for you.
Okay.
Okay, my question is, I'm hoping maybe you can have another guest on that can speak with animals, especially my concern is on honeybees, the honeybee story. Whatever happened to it? Did they find the cause? Because scientists right now, they can't seem to find an answer to what happened to them.
Yeah, exactly. Linda Moulton Howe will be with us this Friday, and in the second hour, we're opening up the phone lines. We'll talk with her about that.
Yeah, I was wondering if the lady that spoke with animals, if she spoke with bees, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, my cat story is I looked around when I was a young man at 16. I wanted to have a white kitten, you know, white cat. I checked all around the neighborhood or places and stuff, you know, and nobody had one. Well, I thought, well, I'll check the local animal shelter, mm-hmm. you know, see what they have. So I called them up on the phone and says, well, you need to come down and see this cat because... he's an older cat. He's a white cat, but he's old and we're older cat, adult. We're going to, you know.
Put him away. Yeah.
Right. And I said, okay, I'll give him a chance. I'll come down and look at him. So I go down. He's in this cage all by himself with these dogs all around him in other cages. He's not excited or bothered at all. I look, he's got a lot of nerve. He's not even bothered.
Yeah.
I looked at him. He looked at me and says, I'm going to take him. Okay. So I take this cat. And after a while, I'm working as a young guy as a security guard, and I'm sleeping on my back, and it's daytime, and cats run around the house. He climbs up on my chest, and I'm totally asleep. And in my dream, this cat's sitting there, and he's talking to me in my dream and saying, you know, I really like you picking me up from this shelter. You know, it was a nice thing to do. I like it here. You feed me. We're cool. I like you, and I like this, and I like that. Okay, then I wake up, and I look in his blue eyes, looking right at me in the face like he's laughing.
I love it.
And he takes off. Okay, that's why I went to lay on you, George.
You got it.
Okay.
Thanks. You saved the cat's life, and of course he cares about you. Let's go to the first-time caller line. You're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Sheldon from Long Beach, California.
Hello, Sheldon.
How you doing? I just had a couple stories to tell you. Well, when I was growing up, I was raised pretty much by my grandmother, and her husband was Jack Parsons. He was the head of the OTO back in the 50s, and he also helped found the JPL, Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Sure.
In yeah, and he died of an explosion in Pasadena in his house. And after my grandmother, they were getting ready to go on a trip to Mexico, and she went to the store, and she came back, and the place was blown up. But anyway, I was raised with the arts and then magic and stuff, and I had a couple experiences, like when I was younger, out of body experiences. I was walking down this hall. I was visiting with a friend, and I was doing my laundry downstairs, and I knew exactly where to go to the laundry room. And for some reason, I was disoriented and I got lost, and I was drawn to this door, and I went to the door, and I was jiggling the knob, and I couldn't stop jiggling. I was stuck there. It was locked, and I was there for about, it seemed like a good 10 minutes, and all of a sudden the door opened, and there was a guy standing there with a beard. And right when he opened the door, I could see the back of his head and myself standing there. And then the rest of the day was a total blur. I don't remember how I got home or anything. And then later on, I had a couple of sleep paralysis experiences where I was you know, kind of stuck in that paralysis state, and I couldn't move, and I kind of fell into like a vortex where I was spinning faster and faster and falling, and I couldn't get out of it, and I had this impending doom feeling if I couldn't shake it that I wouldn't come back. And later on, I kind of tried to induce that with myself, and I had succeeded one time. It was kind of scary. I'm laying there, and I pictured my head where my toes were, and I just believed it. And then I fell into that hole again, and I just kept spinning faster and faster. And I thought it was a way that I could, you know, kind of control out-of-body experience.
Did it work for you?
It was uncontrollable. I felt like I was going to die. Like, they talk about you have a cord, like, you know, an umbilical cord or something. That,
right.
You know, but it was total blackness, and it I felt like it was a near-death experience.
Well, so, I'm glad you were able to pull yourself out of it, that's for sure. A few more minutes here, and then we're going to play a real quick clip with the late crocodile hunter, Steve Irwin. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir.
This is Tommy from Seattle.
Hey, Tommy, what's going on?
Two things. I want to talk, one, about your last guest briefly, and then another thing.
All right, and I'm going to be in Seattle on February 23rd, so come on up and see me. I'll have more info later.
Okay. Listen, I have been abducted 4 times, and I've had 30-plus alien visits. And your last guest has the exact same mindset that these guys have, except they view us as the animals in pain, and we are the ones who torture and kill each other in misery, and so on. Her mindset is the same all the way down to the communicating in pictures, to the way that everybody can develop this communication. And I'm just dumbfounded that she could actually be one of these gray guys talking on the radio if I didn't know
she
better.
She doesn't look like a gray guy, I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, I'm just amazed.
Well, she's in one heck of a costume.
It's just outstandingly good mindset. And all these gray guys believe in that. Now, that said, down to earth to get to the next thing. The Democratic Party is headquarters is punishing the Michigan Party for holding their election early. I really resent political parties telling states when they can have an election and who they can vote for.
I agree with you.
Beside this.
Yep.
Now, on the news, there was some things about the states tying the Electoral College vote to the popular
vote. Yep, they're starting to switch. New Jersey's done it. Maryland's done it. Illinois is going to do it. It's starting.
we're going to take our country back, George, if everybody in the country will call their governor and their politicians and demand that this be done in their own state. We should be able to choose the best man, not have to vote Democratic or Republican, or not have our vote not counted.
I agree with that, too. And okay. We got to take it back. Hey, thanks for the call.
That's for me, George. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe time for one. Nah, probably not. I'm going to talk this one through. I think. Now, we'll take one more call before the Steve Irwin interview. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hello. This is Max from Salt Lake.
Hi, Matt.
In the past, you've had questions about where oil comes from and that it doesn't come from dinosaurs.
I don't think it comes from dinosaurs or dead plants.
It does come from ancient life, though.
What kind of ancient life?
The life that existed before the dinosaurs, probably 1 to 2 billion years before it, what sucked all the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. Deposited on the ocean floor. Oil comes from what?
It would have taken a lot of that life, though.
Oh, it took billions of years to suck it all out and replace it with oxygen, the oxygen we breathe with. But it's calcium carbonate, limestone. Limestone, when continental drift drifts across the limestone, it separates from heat and pressure the carbon out and combines it with water to make, and hydrogen.
So is this your theory? I haven't heard this before.
Well, it was common at one time, but then when they picked up, they started using the dinosaur as a model, and that kind of threw it out the window, didn't it? I mean, that's obvious. The dinosaurs never got that deep, and neither did the plant.
No, see, that's my whole argument, too. So, your theory might hold some oil. You never know. Steve Irwin. He was born on February 22nd, 1962. He died September 4th, 2006. He was scuba diving, and he was fatally pierced by a stingray barb in his chest. But several years ago on Coast to Coast, one of my first interviews, I had an opportunity to interview the crocodile hunter.
Steve, you must have a special connection with animals, because just with what I was seeing today on the animal planet, I mean, you look at these animals and they kind of look back at you. Have you ever tried to figure out what they think about you?
Yeah, I do ponder that from time to time. I was very lucky, George. I was born with a gift. And my dad saw that I had that gift and he nurtured it, what we call an instinct. I can do things with wild animals that people never dreamed possible. And so, as luck would have it, I teamed up with a camera astute person named John Stainton, and he got the cameras all around me, and I just do my thing. I haven't had to change. The cameras have come into my life, and I'm just doing what I've always done. And it seems to be working really well, because through my adventures on television or the big screen, people get to understand and learn about wildlife. It's going across the world really quickly.
You've been bitten before, I'm sure, by a lot of different animals, haven't you?
I have, mate, I have. It's one of the hazards of working so closely with wildlife. I have to rescue, the wildest crocodiles, the angriest snakes. Mate, I've been bitten by more primates than you could poke a stick at. I've nearly been stomped into the ground by elephants. Hippopotamuses tried to kill me. I've been peed on, pooed on, groped, mauled, gored, just about everything you can think of. But, mate, if I take a bite, a serious bite or a serious clawing, it's my fault. It's never the animal's fault. I'll put it to you, George. If you get bitten by a snake, mate, you have to do something wrong for that to happen. I mean, you really do. You have to put yourself into a vulnerable situation. And accidents do happen, but mostly in my line of work, I was too slow, I made a mistake, but I have never in my life, touch wood, ever been bitten by a venomous snake. I'm very lucky, or actually, I'm very gifted, and my dad taught me the ways to work around venomous snakes without taking a bite. He was very, very, very clever and ahead of his time with venomous snakes.
I have noticed when I watch you on television that you have a very special connection with animals. I sometimes feel it a little bit when you look at a dog or a cat at home here, but you have some kind of connection there, and I want to know if you feel that or how it was developed with you.
Yeah, mate. Well, everyone around me jokes, and they call it the Force, you know, because of Star Wars. Use the Force, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all very funny, but every day of my life, people see it. A lot of people have trouble understanding it, and I sure do. I never realized just how much of a gift that I had until my dad started telling me, you know, I'm trying to nurture your gift. You've got to make mistakes so as you can get better and better, because you've got this gift which will actually help conservation go harder and faster than it's ever gone before. So I'm very proud of my mum and dad for doing that. It's unexplainable, mate. It really is. But now, and only now, am I starting to see it. I'm starting to see that I do have this uncanny ability. Here's one bloke, one human being, who can be out in the plains of Namibia in Africa, see a big mob of lions, get out of the four-wheel drive and walk straight up to them, and wow. I knew that they wouldn't attack and eat me. And I don't know how that happens, but I just know I can do that. And, you know, like I swim with sharks, and there was an occasion where this tiger shark should have actually just ripped me in half and eaten me. But I knew he wouldn't. So I jumped in the water with him, and sure enough, he swam around me and came up with his big black eyes, and we kind of spent a very precious moment there for a minute, and then he swam off. I'm not sure how to explain it, George, but I've just got this unbelievable, uncanny gift, and it's about instincts. I've just got these instincts that tell me what, where, and how I can do things which people find unbelievable.
Yep, he's connected to the animals too, wherever he may be now, Steve Irwin. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Wayne Roberts, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.